Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
Previously, just a little bit of review, I was looking at an article called The Great Eschatological Reset. You know, it seems like everybody's on the bandwagon now with some type of a reset or another. More importantly, we were examining some of the reasons why some Christians during throughout history, but particularly in the World War II times, some Christians were believing that Adolf Hitler might be the Antichrist. And of course he wasn't. He was a Antichrist, but not the Antichrist. And so we were looking at some of those reasons. I had a list that I went down. I don't think I need maybe I'll review a few things. And you will see in some of the books that I've used in my research that it's a lot of evidence that Hitler was involved in the occult. He was probably demon-possessed. He wanted a kingdom, just like the Antichrist will have the one-world government. He wanted the Third Reich. He was very anti-Semitic against the Jews, as will the Antichrist be. Although, thankfully, the Lord has always kept a remnant of Israel because of his promises to Israel. Satan will always attempt to destroy the Jews. And I won't go into the reasons for that right now. I have in past podcasts, so I won't touch that now. He apparently had psychic powers. He believed in a providence for his life, what the New Age people might call serendipity or synchronicity. Not true biblical providence, of course, but he had apparent protection at times. People were mesmerized by his speech, as will the Antichrist mesmerize people by his speech. He compared himself to Christ. Hitler did. Obviously, Jesus Christ will be seeking to show himself that he is the Messiah, both for Israel and the world. And he had school children sang his songs like scripture, and they prayed to him. Hitler, that is. He had these precognitive and false prophetic understandings of things. He used visualization, which is an occult tool. Both New Agers and other occultists over years and years have used visualization, creative visualization, to try to bring about reality, create their own reality, so to speak, since the belief is that they're God or part of God or what have you. They have this divine energy of God, you know, that we all have and that we can tap into. So there's some of the reasons that we looked at before and we were going to continue to look at. Now, I want to list some books that I'm going to be using over the period of this study. I'm not sure how long this is going to take, but to me it's fascinating, and I think it's also very relevant to the times we live in, because I do believe we're living in the last days, and you won't hear any predictions of any dates or any such things. I'm not going to tell you who the Antichrist is, because I don't know, and I know that no one knows. Only God knows. But we are going to be studying and looking at, of course, the Bible, but we're going to look at some other books that analyzed Hitler's life. And the first one I touched on last week was called Nazis and the Occult by Paul Rowland, written in 2008. The Occult Reich by J.H. Brennan. I don't have the date handy for me here. Hanzi, the Girl Who Loved the Swastika. This is a woman I heard speak when I was in Bible college many years ago. Hitler, Black Magician by Gerald Suster. The Twisted Cross by Joseph Carr. And then, of course, there may be a few references within those books where they're referencing a couple other people too, but I won't mention those books since I didn't go to them as a primary source for my research. Now, as we have looked at these things, we were looking last week at just some of the ways that this providential, apparent providence protected him from harm on two occasions as a World War I soldier. Now, in this book, The Occult Reich by J.H. Brennan, in chapter 3, the subtitle of this chapter is The Prophetic Führer. And this is what we will look at starting off as we look at this book. This is a very interesting book. And so the history of the Führer has been analyzed time and again, but always the precognitive element has been overlooked. So in the past, of course, this book is a little bit older, but secular historians, in other words, would not, who don't even believe in the supernatural, would have overlooked the precognitive, or the fact that Hitler had precognition, you know, sort of a psychic type abilities. Yet this element is present in virtually every major political move Hitler made from the time he came to power to the outbreak of war in 1939. Afterward, observers talked about iron nerve, tactical genius, and instinctive grasp of human psychology. But Hitler's iron nerve was more apparent than actual. His tactical blunders lost him the war, and his instinctive grasp of human psychology was generally limited to the discovery that if he shouted at people, he often frightened them. because Hitler was a politician, we tend to evaluate his actions only in political terms. But if we begin with the premise that Hitler was a precog, and that's the term for precognitive ability, the same facts suddenly make far more sense. What are these facts? Hitler came to power in 1933. The foundations of his power were shaky. yet he began almost at once a secret policy of rearmament. This, of course, was after World War I and the Versailles Treaty. We know that Germany was permitted to rearm and later allowed to use her armaments. We know that Hitler got away with it. But in 1934, the year this undercover rearmament began, there were few Germans who would have cared to predict how the Allied powers would react. Political advisors felt the risk was considerable. German economists were even more worried. The economy of the shattered fatherland was precarious enough. They could not see it supporting a military establishment for long. Hitler, standing alone, thought the Allies would do nothing. And although disinterested in economics and totally ignorant of its mysteries, he disagreed entirely with his experts. Rearmament, he felt, would strengthen the German economy rather than weaken it. Politically and economically, within the framework of the thinking of the day, Hitler's policies made no sense. Yet despite the fact that he was really only finding his feet in office, despite the weak foundations of his power, he pressed ahead. He knew, the author says. Toward the end of 1934, German rearmament was more or less an open secret. By March 1935, there came the first official reaction from Britain. A government white paper published on the 5th of that month commented unfavorably on the development of a strengthening Luftwaffe, you know, their aircraft, Air Force. High Nazi officials were, to say the least, disturbed. But Hitler's reaction was typically arrogant. On March 16th, he unilaterally wiped out the military sections of the Versailles Treaty, introduced conscription, and began to arm openly. The Allies had the option of a preventative war, which at the time would have been easily fought and quickly over. In the end, the Allies did nothing, as Hitler foresaw that they would. A year later, German troops marched into the Rhineland. It was a direct affront to France, the same France which, as the Nazis now knew, had been pressing for action only a year before. French and German soldiers now faced one another in a nose-to-nose confrontation. Hitler's generals were nervous as kittens. Not so Hitler. Against all reason, he knew that not a shot would be unloosed, and he was right. France appealed to the League of Nations. March 1938, after weeks of gradually increasing tension, Hitler finally took over Austria. Could anyone have predicted how the Allies would view that move? Excuse me. Hitler, against all common sense, had a feeling there would be no international opposition, and he was right. If we were discussing the history of a well-known psychic such as Peter Hurkos or Gerard Crozet, and these are terms you may not be familiar with as this book is a little bit older, we could have little doubt, even at this stage, that ESP was behind such incredible decisions. And by the way, this reminds me a bit of Turkey's leader Erdogan today, in these days, and his reckless, provocative actions in our days. It just seems like not much is being done to affect his actions, of course. And he is, of course, very much going to be a future is an enemy, really, of Israel. But anyway, I'm getting off topic. it does remind me, though, of Erdogan. Very interesting. It says Hitler was not finished. His vision of the future still assured him he could make further moves with safety. As early as May of 1938, he began to pile on the pressure against Czechoslovakia, where he had cast a greedy eye on the German-populated Sudetenland. By September 13th, the situation had deteriorated to such a degree that William Schurer, by then in Prague, noted in his diary, "War is very near." And of course, Schurer wrote a historical book concerning Hitler and the German Empire, which I'll mention later. But things were not as they seemed. War was not near, as Hitler, once again, against the opinion of his military advisors, seemed to sense. It was not until Chamberlain, and that is Chamberlain, who was the head of the Prime Minister of England at the time, it was not until, excuse me, I have a frog attacking my throat. It must be annoying for you folks. Sorry about that. It was not until Chamberlain's second Munich trip on September 28th that Hitler finally agreed to a settlement, one which incidentally gave him everything he wanted without war, a fantastic gamble if one could not foresee the outcome. And still Hitler was not finished. On March 15th, 1939, German forces occupied Bohemia and Moravia. The Allies did nothing, as Hitler seemed once more to know they would. From 1933 until September 1939, when German troops invaded Poland, Hitler did not make a single international miscalculation. Indeed, whether his precognitive ability failed him in September is open to question. No precog sees a vista of the future. He gets glimpses here and there. Throughout the 30s, Hitler must have strained his ESP ability toward an answer to one recurring question. What will France and Britain do? Excuse me. The answer came repeatedly. France and Britain will do nothing. If we assume that Hitler stretched out his weird ESP ability to find out what France and Britain would do if he invaded Poland, we must also assume his answer was that they would do again nothing. On the evidence of his subsequent actions, his visions must have shown all quiet on the Western Front. And his visions were correct. The Allies declared war in September 1939, but they did not go to war. German and French soldiers faced each other on the border, but not a shot was fired. Nazi troops, aided by the Russians, occupied Poland with such speed, and that would be the blitzkrieg, you know, type warfare you hear so much about, lightning warfare, with such speed that the Allies were quickly presented with a fait accompli, which seemed to leave them at a loss. No wonder the prophetic Führer thought Britain and France would do nothing if his armies marched on Poland. He had seen them doing nothing in his visions. But the talent did not come easily. Like the primitive shaman, and you know, shamans are people like witch doctors in primitive cultures who are in touch with spirit beings. Like the primitive shaman, he seemed to require the ecstatic state before long-distance precognition would function. Even then, it was an uncertain business, and if he was typical of ecstatic precogs, there must have been many occasions when he came down to earth with no memory of what he had seen. Hitler got high on hate and words. He intoxicated himself on destructive emotion. Faced with the chemical changes that he would get when he would get into these states of hate and ranting, the brain would sometimes change gear, as it were, throwing up a new level of consciousness. Sometimes, momentarily, these new levels would allow glimpses of the distant future. And, of course, you could term this an altered state of consciousness, I think. Intoxication of this nature reached such heights in Hitler that he would fling himself on the floor and chew the edges of the carpet, behavior perfectly comparable to Haitians possessed by spirits. You know, they're involved in voodoo a lot in Haiti, during voodoo ritual. He was known behind his back as Teppich Fresher, or the Carpet Eater. Now, I heard a lady, and she went by the name pseudonym of Hansi, and she wrote the book I mentioned earlier, Hansi, the Girl Who Loved the Swastika, and I heard her speak at Columbia Bible College, where I attended. And her comments were that Hitler's guards, that who she had spoken to, because she was in the youth, you know, Hitler League and all, she talked to the guards, and they said that they would hear him speaking to people that weren't there, in other words, demons, and claiming that they had betrayed him, you know, and that was towards the end of his rule, and that also he was a carpet biter or eater. Now, that's the first time I had heard that term really from her many years ago. I graduated in 1983, and I heard her sometime there at the school. I can't remember which year I heard her, but the point is there are those who have said that that term carpet biter really is a, possibly it's a German slang for a person who flew into a rage easily, that it wasn't necessarily that they were, you know, literally chewing on the carpet. It did seem a little odd, you know, but I had heard that, like I say, on more than one occasion, that he was a carpet biter without any reference to it being a slang. So, you know, take your pick. I really don't know. and I don't know the German language, so we'll leave it at that. But concerning Hansi, her full name is was actually Maria Ann Hirschman, and she wrote the book Hansi, the Girl Who Loved the Swazi in 1973. In 2009, her scheduled appearance at a U.S. Air Force Academy symposium was canceled after the Colorado Springs Gazette religion columnist Mark Barna quoted her as saying, "Obama is the result of a trend in America that is going away from the Judeo-Christian ethic. Obama is a socialist, one step from communism. He could pave the way for a future Antichrist. Obama scares me," she said, "because he has no record and people flock to him. Hitler also had no record. People flocked to him, and both wrote a book. Christians laid flat, and Hitler came to power, just like with Obama. Obama is the result of the secular news media brainwashing America." I can't disagree with her on a lot of these points. "The media put Obama into power. He is so inexperienced." She clarified her views about the president in her February 2009 newsletter, stating, "The adulation he received reminded me of former times in Germany when Adolf Hitler was selected in a jubilant election to become the new leader of Germany, and within short years also the Führer for Austria and Czechoslovakia, etc.," which is where she was from, Czechoslovakia. "I was accused that I called Obama another Hitler, but I never did that. I'm not saying such a thing, but I do pray for President Obama very often. He needs it." And just, you know, there have been instances, by the way, of people, you know, just for the fact check, that in the past during Obama's administration, that school teachers and schools were promoting Obama in such a way that children were, you know, really almost a form of Obama worship. And there were a couple examples that I looked up to fact check before, but I saw in my own, with my own eyes, something I thought was interesting. I went to my 50th anniversary of my grade school anniversary. Yes, folks, I'm old. And recently, actually, and going through the school and going through the library, I naturally gravitated towards the religion section. And I found three books all about Barack Obama in the religion section of my old grade school. And I thought, well, gee, somebody must have misplaced this. And no, I don't think they probably did. But anyway, this is not, I don't intend for this to be a ongoing rant concerning Barack Obama. But I just thought that it was interesting, her comments. And then that is backed up with some ill-advised people's promotion, I think, of Barack Obama beyond just a political leader. Now, a little bit more about Marianne Hirschman. And this was sort of like the bad news for me. This is from the AD Vindicate publication by Kevin Paulson in 2014. It says, "Most Adventists today probably don't remember her. I don't even know if she's still alive. Her former husband recently passed away. She was an Adventist teenager, Seventh-day Adventist, living in the German-dominated Sudetenland, which was then Czechoslovakia. Now, she left home at the age of 14 to receive advanced training in the Hitler Youth movement. Soon she became a devout and passionate Nazi, leaving the faith of her childhood behind." And that saddened me a bit because, you know, when I heard her speak at Columbia Bible College, of course, my Bible college is not Seventh-day Adventist, you know, thank the Lord. I mean, there are nice Seventh-day Adventist people, but I consider the Seventh-day Adventists actually a theological cult. So, you know, not to take away the comments or the insights that she had about Hitler or even about Obama for her observations, but to be fair, I needed to mention that when I discovered that because I thought, oh, no. But it's interesting, Pastor Scott, one of the teachers, actually one of my favorite teachers, he taught church history and cults, the religious cults class, and he had said, we were using Walter Martin's book, Kingdom of the Cults, as a textbook, but he gave us the disclaimer. He said, you know, Walter Martin, in the appendix, one of the appendixes of the book, he categorized Seventh-day Adventist as not as a cult, but as a as a group that teaches some error, okay? But he wanted to make that disclaimer, Pastor Scott did. He said, hey, the Seventh-day Adventist almost got me, you know, more or less, and that he believed that they also were a theological cult. But he wanted to use Martin's book because it was the best book he knew of at the time on the cults, but he had to give that little disclaimer. So I thought that was interesting that Pastor Scott teaching at CBC knew all about the Seventh-day Adventist. So she came and spoke, and I'm glad I heard her, and I'm glad for the information that was found there. But just very interesting little side notes there concerning the lady Hanzi, the girl who loved the swastika, and some of her insights. Now, let's see. Certainly, Hitler's speeches, and this is back to the Occult Reich book, contain more than one clue to the possibility of precognition. He actually surprised his audience by predicting, and this was 11 days before this Munich beer hall explosion that he survived, but that he had predicted a five-year war for World War II. It says, allowing for the fact he spoke roughly in round terms, he was perfectly correct. And I double-checked that, fact-checked that, and World War II actually was approximately 6 years. You know, in other words, if you rounded it off, as this guy said, he was pretty much accurate when he predicted a five-year war before the fact. Okay, now moving on. Adolf Hitler was born, and this is chapter 4 of Brennan's book, The Occult Reich. Mystery Powers. Adolf Hitler was born on April 20th, 1889, in the former town of Brennau. It is medium country, and they're talking about spiritualist mediums, by the way. Madame Stockholm's, it's okay, I've never heard of her either, was born there. So too were Willy and Rudy Schneider. The Schneider brothers had remarkable abilities. Willie, the elder of the two, discovered he had psychokinetic powers, the ability to move objects at a distance during a seance when he was just 16. He held his hand near a type of planchet, which is a device used in automatic writing where someone goes into a trance state and their hand produces writing that's not from themselves. It's through that spirit, that demon that's working through them to bringing information from the other side. And that thing is called a planchet that they put their hand in. It's got little rollers on it, and they move their hand around. You know, it's easily accessed moving of the hand to so that the writing can flow out onto the page. He held his hand near a type of planchet, which startled sisters enormously by writing out the word Olga of its own accord. So there was nobody's hand in the planchet. It just started moving. The entity Olga and her medium, Willie, were subsequently investigated by several leading psychic researchers of the day. Without exception, they concluded the phenomena Willie produced were genuine. These phenomena included the levitation of small objects, such as a bracelet or handkerchief, the ringing of an untouched bell, the tilting of a table, and the production of ectoplasm. Olga eventually transferred to Brother Rudy, this entity, this spirit entity, this demon, actually, counterfeit spirit, transferred to Brother Rudy, who went on to produce similar weird effects frequently under test conditions. I believe this came from the book The Dawn of Magic by Louis Powells and Jacques Berger. According to these men, Hitler shared the same wet nurse as Willy Schneider. Did he, one wonders, half seriously, imbibe something with the milk? You know, we have the expression, was there something in the water in that area? Certainly, quite apart from precognition, Hitler displayed powers just as mysterious in their own way as anything Willie Schneider ever produced. And then from the book Hitler, Black Magician by Gerald Suster, this is a similar account. He says, Adolf Hitler's birthplace, Braunau am Inn, on the border of the German, Austro-Hungarian empires, had the reputation of producing mediums. The nurse who sucked that remarkable woman, the nurse who suckled that remarkable medium, Willie Schneider, also suckled Hitler, a fact which, according to some, endowed the baby with psychic power. Well, you know, it's weird stuff, right? But both of these authors thought it was interesting to make note of it. So I wanted to also include that as we look at, you know, the origin of some of Hitler's powers. Of course, he made choices in life, to be sure. With his slick down hair and toothbrush mustache, his curious gait and walk was described as ladylike. He really looked like Charlie Chaplin, the screen Charlie Chaplin. When Chaplin presented his delightful movie, The Great Dictator, he did not have to change much of his familiar screen appearance to show he was satirizing Hitler. That much was painfully obvious. It seems astonishing that a man who looked like Charlie Chaplin could be taken seriously, let alone rise to a position of power. Yet Hitler not only managed it, but also demonstrated a degree of control over his fellow men that would be unbelievable were it not so well attested. You know, we're talking about mysterious powers here. It says, I was a little shocked at the faces, especially those of the women, and this is William Shirer, who wrote a book on Nazi Kingdom, describing the reaction to Hitler's brief appearance on a balcony at Nuremberg in 1934. They reminded me of the crazed expressions I once saw in the backcountry of Louisiana on the faces of some holy rollers who were about to hit the trail. They looked up at him as if he were a messiah, their faces transformed into something positively inhuman. Again, Hitler's power to bewitch an audience has been likened to the occult arts of the African medicine man or the Asiatic shaman. Others have compared it to the sensitivity of a medium and the magnetism of a hypnotist. Many attempts at explanation have been made. One thing which quickly emerges to increase the mystery was that Hitler was no great orator. His voice was too harsh. He was long-winded. He was repetitive. He was imprecise. Strasser maintained that until he lost himself in his passions, he never rose above the level of a very poor mediocrity. But when he did let go, when he did sink into those trances of ecstatic rage, what a difference it made. Waves of raw power flooded from him to engulf his audience. There is one adjective which occurs time and again when this aspect of Hitler's character is discussed. That adjective is hypnotic. Explaining his personal magnetism, Alan Bullock, for instance, remarks, this was connected with the curious power of his eyes, which are persistently said to have some sort of hypnotic quality. So God bless you all. Once again, I want to remind you that Jesus Christ is Lord. He's won the victory, and I hope you'll join us next week. Good night.